Today on Idea Tellers.
I think we have far more power than we think. And sometimes we think we have to exercise our power with voices of dissent. I think we have power to shape situations.
Be ready to learn from a leader's leader.
What is top of mind for you? If I were to be channeling my energy to where it would be most valuable for you, what things would I be working on?
Liz Wiseman is a researcher and executive advisor who teaches leadership to executives around the world.
Impactful contributors, they quickly step in and fill that leadership void. Like, okay, we're a little bit leaderless, let me step in and offer leadership. But they don't insist on always being the leader. So it's not like, hey, I'm the boss and I will lead all of those meetings or conversations. Is they step in and lead assertively and gracefully, but then they as willingly and gracefully step back and follow other people's.
She's the author of New York Times bestseller, Multipliers, How the Best Leaders Make Everyone Smarter, The Multiplier Effect, Tapping the Genius Inside Our Schools, and Wall Street Journal bestseller, Rookie Smarts, Why Learning Beats Knowing in the New Game of Work. She's the CEO of the Wiseman Group, a leadership research and development firm headquartered in Silicon Valley, California. Some of her recent clients include Apple, AT&T, Disney, Facebook, Google, Microsoft, Nike, Salesforce, Tesla, and Twitter. Whoa. Liz has been listed on the Thinkers 50 ranking and named one of the top 10 leadership thinkers in the world.
I want people who are like mini managers. I want people who don't wait to be given permission or commissioned to do things. They're like, oh, I see a need. I'm going to just go solve a need. I see a problem. I'm not going to wait for my boss to figure out that this is a problem. I'm going to go in and solve it. So you can do that and sort of intuit it or divine those kinds of things. There's an easier way to do it is to just talk to your boss. Like, what's important to you right now?
This is Idea Tellers. Hola, mi gente. Welcome to another edition of Idea Tellers. I'm trying not to be starstruck because the author that we're going to speak with today, she has made a great impact on me. She has exercised a great influence on my thinking and in many powerful and prominent organizations. Her name is Liz Wiseman. Bienvenida. Welcome, Liz.
Oh, it is so good to be here.
Liz is a research and an executive advisor. She teaches leadership to executives around the world. She's the author of New York Times bestseller, Multipliers, How the Best Leaders Make Everyone Smarter. And currently, she just released her new book, Impact Players, How to Take the Lead, Play Bigger, and Multiply Your Impact. So once again, welcome. As our previous conversation, Liz, I think that Multipliers had the thesis that a leader's behavior can increase or decrease one's ability to contribute. Am I right?
Yeah, and that's really well said. In fact, I feel like I might need to write that down because maybe you sum that up better than I ever have.
And on the other hand, while Multipliers tackles how to identify those leaders, you know, I think that Impact Players deals with how to become one powerful and influential leader. Would you say that's the case?
Yeah, I think that's a nice way that Multipliers is about the being and doing of great leaders who bring out greatness in others. And Impact Players is the becoming story. It's how do you build influence? How do you make an impact? How do you become a leader? And, you know, in some ways, Multipliers is looked at what great leaders do. And Impact Players is looking at what great contribution is, what great contributors do, and not just contributors as in junior level members of teams, but contributors at all levels. And Scott Cook, the founder and CEO of Intuit, the company Intuit, he took a look at the book and I just loved his reaction because he's, you know, he's a founder and CEO and he's also a bazillionaire or something like this. And he's like, oh, I love this because even if you're the CEO of an organization, there is still a big part of your role that is contributing and how you offer your ideas and how you interact in meetings and how you work with your board and your clients. It's kind of like being a parent. It's like, I'm a parent, I have four kids, but I am first and foremost a daughter.
Okay.
Like, it's the role that I started in, as I am a daughter, and I will always be a daughter. Even when my parents are gone, I am still a daughter. It's like, even the most senior leaders are still contributors.
Wow. This is so remarkable. Today, we're recording on November 2nd. Many cultures on this side of the world celebrate Day of the Dead, and it's all about remembering those who came before us, you know, and the fact that you see yourself foremost as a daughter is very touching, and it resonates a lot with my culture, and I appreciate that.
Because today I'm going to go down and help my mom move a bunch of junk out of her house. Today I'm particularly thinking about, I have so much work to do, but you know what? I am first and foremost my mother's daughter, and you know, she needs help right now, and that's more important than anything else.
Service, isn't that what the greatest impact is? Am I right?
And it's kind of a big thing that came out of the research. You know, some people know me as an author, but I'm like, first and foremost, I'm a researcher. And it's one of the themes that came out of the research, and I did choose to kind of weave that through the book, is that the people who are the most influential are people who have a service orientation. They are there to serve, and they're looking for places to add value rather than looking to extract value from systems.
Yes.
How do I get something out of this? It's how do I put in value? How do I contribute value? And they become extraordinarily valuable people on teams and in organizations, and they make, you know, really valuable contributions in the world.
I agree. And something admirable of the way you conduct your research and express it is that you illustrate every principle with real people by name. For example, you make the comparison with a doctor by the name of Beth Ripley and Arnold Giorgio Mirador. I don't know if he's Latino or not, but hey, the fact that you highlight that he goes into an operating room and he organizes the instruments according to the operation that is going to take place, and the rest of the operating team says, no, that guy is valuable, we need him there. How were you able to find these stories? You know, it's not only relatable, it's memorable. It creates an impression on me.
You know, Jojo Mirador, who is an immigrant to the United States, like, his story really touched me. Some of these stories I go out and find through my research. And I'd say, you know, probably 60% of the stories in the book are about impact players that we heard about through the 170 interviews I went out and did with managers across 9 different companies. And so they're telling us, let me tell you about this amazing person. And her name is Fiona Sue, and she does this, or, you know, Sabine. But then some of them are people that the story just finds me during the book writing process. So here's how I found that story. Here's how I discovered Jojo. And that is, I was working on the book, and we had someone, a dear friend of our family, named Josh, who was living with us. And Josh is a surgical resident. And, you know, Josh would come back from very, very long days as a surgical resident where they're working indecent hours, indecent amounts of work. And he'd come back and he would always say, hey, Liz, how's the book going? What did you work on today? Did you get anything done? Is kind of what he was saying. Like, and it was like his therapy at the end of his long days doing surgery and being a resident. And I would tell him about, oh, well, I worked on this section today. And I was working on this section about people who don't just do their job. They do the job that really needs to be done. They're kind of rangy. They extend themselves. They're not like, well, my job is just to do this. And he goes, oh, that reminds me so much of this scrum tech who works down in the Santa Clara Valley Medical School. It's one of the hospitals that's on the residency rotation. And he said, when you are in the OR with Jojo, like most scrub techs, like their job is to make sure that instruments are sterile and available. And then when the surgeon asks for an instrument like scalpel, you know, they hand them over. And he goes, Jojo's not like that. He like lays them out in the order that they're going to be used. So he's like got them ready. And he's not just watching the surgery, you know, and listening for the instrument. He's like watching the surgeon's hands and anticipating what is that person's next move? What's the job they have to do And then when the surgeon asks for the instrument, Jojo doesn't just hand him the one they asked for. What my friend told me, he said he hands them the one they actually need. You know, and he's a scrub tech. He's a fairly, you know, it's a junior role. And he's in there with surgeons, which are kind of like, I don't know, the hot shots of the medical world, like the Top Guns, you know, like Maverick and, you know. And what he's recognizing is some of them are young surgeons or surgeons in training. And he's got more experience with some of those procedures, not as the surgeon, but observing. And he knows that actually the move they need to make is going to be better done with a different instrument. And so he doesn't just say like, hey, dummy, you don't need that, you need this. He does it with this incredible grace. And he's like, oh, you know what? Why don't you try this one? It might work better for you here.
Wow.
And, you know, of course, the young residents are so grateful that he doesn't just do his job. He reaches a little beyond. But even I asked him, I'm like, you know, I got to interview him and I'm so excited about that. And I'm like, Jojo, what happens when the old people, like the surgeons who have been doing this for dozens of years, what happens when you offer them a different instrument? And he's like, oh yeah, no, like they're not insulted, because he does it with such humility and such grace.
Hey.
And, you know, come to find out that these more experienced surgeons, they seek out his opinion before the surgery. And they're like, hey, Jojo, we're doing this, you know, complicated procedure. Like, what do you think about this? And what do you think are the best tools? And Jojo's like, you know what? It feels pretty good to have these surgeons come to me and want to know my opinion. And, you know, they often find themselves kind of fighting over Jojo. Like, no, no, we need him. No, no, we need him. And they've developed this wonderful little system that if two surgical teams both want Jojo in the OR at the same time, there's like this sort of like, I don't know, a gentlemanly agreement that whoever's doing the most innovative, complicated procedure is the one that deserves it. I just think like, so, you know, my doctor surgeon friend is telling me this and I'm like, can you introduce me to Jojo? I have to meet him. I have to like, these are interesting people.
And it says a lot about, on the one hand, the culture that allows Jojo to have a saying and where he feels that he's appreciated and the value that he's adding is appreciated. And on the other hand, the way that Jojo has contributed to the team and frankly to the lives of whoever's being operated upon, am I right?
I assume so.
You've touched on something very interesting, because while I was reading your book, it's not just a cry to work harder, you know, which might become an excuse for the supervisors to oppress the employees and expect better results, because that's a 20th century way of working. But it's actually, how do you become useful, provide solutions in a way that is not a step on toes of people?
In some ways, it's an invitation to think more.
Uh-huh.
Rather than work harder, it's to think about, where can I be of value? What's important right now? What's the job that really needs to be done? How do I do that? How do I do it without abandoning my job? Like, where can I contribute? And it's about being a little bit assertive, not just waiting for someone to come along and discover you, like, oh, Liz, we're going to promote you into a leadership role and give you authority over people. It's recognizing that at any given time, we have far more influence and control than we might think. And for me, you know, there was a lot of experiences early in my life that taught me to don't sit back and wait for someone to give you permission to be in charge. Like, you can take charge of situations that don't seem like you're in charge. And I found that it's true in the workplace. Is, you know, I've gone to meetings I wasn't invited to. I've stepped into leadership roles where no one ever asked me to do that. And I'm just like, well, okay, it seems like we have a leadership vacuum. And I think there's so much more room for us to contribute. But we have to be thinking about, where could I be useful?
It's taking initiative to do that. It's interesting, because you don't waste time dealing with people who have the loser attitude, the selfish attitude. You make a difference between the contributor and the impact player. It's like, no, we're talking about a superior level here. Someone who is already a contributor is not an impact player necessarily. An impact player is someone who goes above and beyond, you know, and takes initiative to make things different and better. Can you tell me about that decision to focus that, which I agree with, by the way? It's like pointing towards excellence, if you ask me.
Well, I think this is when a couple of my friends were the ones who helped me see that the most interesting thing I could do in this book was not to write a book about, oh, here's what high performers do and here's what low performers do. Like, in some ways, that's a train wreck and that's interesting. Like, okay, let me tell you about this disaster, you know, person. And like, it's I'm looking at something more subtle than that, which is like, what are the small differences in how people think and act that make a big difference in their impact? And I'm going to look at the small differences between people who are doing a solid job and people who are doing a stellar job.
Oh, wow.
And in some ways, there's no villain in that story because there's no one who's like a train wreck kind of contributor. It's like, it's about the difference between people who are going through the motions of their job versus breaking through, having impact, building influence. And that's because that's where I think most people are. One of the things I've learned studying some of the best leaders in the world, as well as some of the worst, because part of my job has been... People sometimes see me as like, oh, the multipliers lady. Like, oh, yeah, you're the one, you know, talks about multiplier leaders. Well, I've also spent a lot of time looking at diminishing leaders. And here's the thing that I've learned. And it's really about contributorship. Uh-huh. I've learned that everyone comes to work wanting to contribute fully.
Yes.
That people come like full of ambition and like, I have ideas and capability and I want to contribute. And when they can't, it's exhilarating. And when they can't, it's draining and it's exhausting to the point where like people often learn not to do that. But I think what I've learned is that people come to work wanting to do a really good job, wanting to do a great job. And it's not about a few ambitious people who want to be really successful. I think everyone wants to contribute and wants their work to matter and have meaning.
This concludes the first part of our interview with Liz Wiseman, author of Impact Players. On our next podcast, we'll learn how to become a team member that makes a positive impact in whatever mission that you might be engaged to. This is Idea Tellers.